Next, I want us to consider, we're going to skip ahead to the New Testament for just a brief moment before coming back. And I want us to think about Joseph, Jesus' stepfather. And let's turn to Matthew chapter 1 and begin our reading at verse 18. Now the birth of Jesus Christ was as follows. When his mother Mary had been betrothed to Joseph. Now betrothal in that time was as binding as a marriage, even though it hadn't been consummated. So it was a significant event. And before they came together, she was found to be with child by the Holy Spirit. And Joseph, her husband, being a righteous man and not wanting to disgrace her, planned to send her away secretly. What a tough situation to find yourself in. You have betrothed yourself to a righteous girl. Everything you know about her is good. You yourself are a godly person. This seems like an excellent match. And then you have the heart-wrenching discovery that the person that you're married to is pregnant. How do you feel, how do you think Joseph felt when he discovered that? That would have been a terrible experience. Now, why didn't God come to him ahead of time and tell him? You notice that God allowed Joseph to agonize with what to do before God came to him in a dream saying, "Don't be afraid to take Mary as your wife." Now, I used to read that story and be very irritated by that. Here's God. He's got a plan. This is a supernatural thing. And it seems as though he's letting Joseph, who is a righteous man, he's letting Joseph agonize over what to do about this adultery for no good reason. What profit is there in having Joseph in this emotional turmoil? Why not just tell the guy ahead of time, "Look, this is what's happening. There isn't any need for this. What to do? I don't want to disgrace her. Should I? How am I going to send her away? What are we going to do?" There wasn't any need for that, and yet God let him go through that anyway. Why do you think God led Joseph that way? Isn't that the same kind of discipline that comes with God leading the people of Israel to where there was no food? Now, God had planned to meet their needs for food all along, but he led the people of Israel there to test them. And I feel like this was a test of God and Joseph's character. What will you do? Do you feel like God has been leading you to marry this girl? Everything has worked out ahead of time. You're betrothed. Everything looks great, and then catastrophe strikes. What do we do when in the midst of God's will, catastrophe strikes? That's a very interesting question, isn't it? I know people right now who seemingly in the middle of God's will, catastrophe has hit their lives. I think of the girl that I mentioned this morning who has this tumor wrapped around the stem of her brain. Inoperable, terminal. You're going along, you're doing the right thing, and wham! This happens. And as he considered this, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared. God comes to us and leads us many times before we make a mistake. Now, this is very comforting to me. Joseph was doing, probably, if we had all sat down with him and he had asked us counsel, he was doing the reasonable thing. You're a good man. You don't want to publicly humiliate her. You're going to do this secretly. And we're going to try to get on with our life. There are other girls you can marry. So we would have counseled him very much the same way that he eventually was decided upon doing. And as he's considering this and he's deciding this is what I'm going to do, God comes and says, "No, I'm directing you this way." What that tells me is that God is faithful enough to come to us in times of decision making and make sure that we don't veer off onto some path that we're not supposed to go. We're talking about how God leads. We're talking about finding God's will. Here's Joseph. You think he wanted God's guidance in this time in his life? Absolutely. Absolutely he did. God initiates, God guides, God makes sure that we don't take a wrong turn. If we're following after Him, if we're obedient to Him, we're listening to Him, He takes the initiative on Himself to make sure that we don't wind up in the ditch. Again, a lot of people feel like, well, God's will is some mysterious thing that He dangles out, and then as we get closer, He lifts it away, and we're kind of like a cat with a piece of yarn. We're constantly trying to grab it. We never can quite get it. That's not what God is doing with His will. And even though He may lead us into situations that don't make sense, just like He did in the times when He was leading Israel, that doesn't mean that He's going to leave you in the lurch and helpless. He's waiting to see, are you willing to trust Me, and I'll take you in the direction you need to go. Now, that's something that can be applied right to us today in our decision making. We're wrestling with something. We have the comfort of knowing that God's going to make sure that we make the right decision. The second illustration from Joseph's life is that in chapter 2, when they go to Egypt. Again, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt. Remain there until I tell you." Doesn't tell him how long he's going to stay there, does he? Leave everything that you've known, abandon all of that, and go to a place you don't know about. You don't have any family, you have no connections, no money, no way of providing for yourself, and you're just going to stay there until I tell you to leave. Wow. Joseph obeys. Off he goes down to Egypt, and they stay there. And a month goes by, and other months goes by, and God meets their needs, and He evidently finds employment, and they're cared for. We're not told how, but God took care of them, and they wait. And the months go by, and still they wait, and nothing happens. How long are we going to be here? I don't know. It's like the cloud with the people of Israel. There it sits. How long is it going to stay there? I don't know. We're going to stay right here until the cloud moves. We're going to stay right here until God leads us somewhere else. There will be times in our lives where God leads us to certain situations, certain circumstances, certain places, and there we are until we're told to leave. And eventually, God tells him to return. Again, as we've seen last time, God leads us one step at a time. All right, let's return now to the Old Testament. And let's turn to Joshua chapter 9. This is a fascinating story. And my heart goes out to Joshua. Many times we read the account of Joshua and the Gibeonites and we think to ourselves, what was he thinking? Well, let me just give you a little background about this guy, Joshua. Joshua had been at Moses' side from an early age. It says that he had been Moses' aide since his youth, the Bible tells us. This is a guy who fought the Amalekites. Moses sent him off to fight the Amalekites, and Moses stands there on the hill overlooking the battle with his arms outstretched. And Joshua's the guy that's out there fighting the battle, and he looks over and he sees that. And he watches how God gives them the victory. This is a guy who went with Moses up the mountain to receive the law. This is a guy who would have seen the thunder and the lightning and the glory of God. This was a guy who saw the tablets that God Himself had written with His own hand. This was a guy who was with Moses when he came back down and saw the people worshiping the golden calf. Here was a guy who was one of the spies who went into the land and believed that God, in spite of the odds against them, God could give them the victory. This is a guy who spent almost 40 years wandering the desert with a bunch of losers who didn't have faith. This is the same guy who led the people across the Jordan River. He saw it part before them, just like the Red Sea. He had fought Jericho and seen the walls come down. They had had that battle with Ai, and there had been sin in the camp and all these things. This guy has been serving God a long time. This guy has inquired of God Himself. And here we find him faced with a decision. These people show up. the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what happened to Jericho and Ai, they acted craftily. They came and they said, "We're from this far country." Joshua said, "Who are you? Where do you come from?" "Well, we're from this far off place. We heard these stories and we're afraid and we want to make peace with you." And it says in verse 14 of Joshua chapter 9, and I want you to consider this. "So the men of Israel took some of their provisions and did not ask for the counsel of the Lord." Now, what does that mean, that the men of Israel took some of their provisions? What that means is that the men of Israel were suspicious. And so they took it upon themselves to investigate these people. They took a good hard look at their equipment. They took a good hard look at their animals. They took a good hard look at the food and the clothing. They did due diligence from a human perspective to investigate and look into this matter. Now that sounds very familiar to me. That sounds like something I would have done. Maybe it sounds like something you would have done. You're faced with a decision. You do your homework. You look at the pros and cons. You investigate the situation thoroughly. You call upon others. Joshua didn't make this decision alone. You call on others to help you. You talk amongst yourselves. You reason the thing out. And you make a rational, intelligent decision. And they did not inquire of the Lord. The day will come when you will be faced with a decision and it will seem to you that you know exactly what to do. That you don't need to ask God about this particular choice. That day will come. I know we want to look at this story and think, "Well, I always ask God what to do beforehand." But I'm warning you, the day will come, just like Joshua. This is not somebody who's been born yesterday. This is somebody who is a man of faith, a man of God. This is somebody who has inquired of the Lord. And there will come a day when it seems to you, you know what to do, and you will be dead wrong. Because you didn't take the time to seek after God. That's a sobering story, isn't it? Joshua made peace with them. And it came about at the end of 3 days, they heard. And it was too late. "Why did you deceive us?" But it was too late. How does God lead us? God's leadership and finding God's will, this story teaches me, it is important for us to be asking God, "What would you have me do?" No matter the situation. No matter how much effort you have put into making a wise decision, no matter who you have gotten counsel from, make sure that in all that you do, you have gone and sought God's counsel as well. Because the day will come when it will seem right to you, and you will be dead wrong. Now, lastly, in closing, I want us to look at the life of Gideon. Turn, if you will, to Judges chapter 6. Gideon is famous in the area of finding God's will, for what activity that he did? Gideon's fleece, right? He put that fleece out there, and that's what he's famous for. But I want us to give this story another look. I think there's more to the fleece than we might initially have thought. First of all, if you look at Judges chapter 6, starting with verse 11, Gideon is out beating wheat in a wine press, and he's doing it secretly so he could save it from the Midianites. Who are the Midianites? Well, after Sarah's death, Abraham married Keturah and had other children, and guess who one of them was? Midian. Midianites. They had oppressed the people. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and says, "The Lord is with you, O valiant warrior." No evidence that Gideon had ever fought in his life. Now, maybe he had, and we're just not told. But We know nothing about Gideon's ability to fight a battle. And yet, the angel says, "Oh, valiant warrior." And Gideon recognized him as an angel, and he said, "If the Lord is with us, then why has all this happened? Where about all the miracles that I keep hearing about as a kid? All the things that God did, where is all that?" And the Lord looked at him and said, "Go in this your strength and deliver Israel from the hand of Midian. Have I not sent you?" Whoa. Wait a second. You don't realize who you're talking to. I'm the youngest in my dad's house. And our tribe is small. And you have got the wrong person. I am not the person you turn to when you're looking for some leader. I'm not a leader. And again, just like God said to Moses, when God sends us, when God leads us in a certain direction in our lives, who goes with us? God goes with us. And that, folks, should make all the difference to us when we think about God's leadership, finding God's will. God is going with us. So he brings back the offering and he puts it there. And what happens? The angel of the Lord put out the end of the staff and touched the meat, and fire sprang up and consumed it all, and the angel vanished. Now, how many feel like that's all Gideon needed to verify that this indeed was God, and this is what God would have him to do, and that God would be with him, and he should now go and do what he was supposed to do? How many feel like this particular supernatural miracle was enough? Just like in the case of Moses with the serpent and leprosy, you would think, well, this is enough. Okay, well, what does Gideon do? Well, God tells him, take your father's bull, pull down the altar of Baal, which belongs to your father, cut down the Asherah pole that's beside it, and build an altar. So sure enough, he goes out, and he goes out at night. He was too afraid, it says, to do it by day. He did it by night. Well, pathetic, isn't he? He's too afraid. Here God does these miracles and Gideon is too afraid to do it by day. He sneaks out there at night. What a failure. Well, I'm not so quick to judge him. I feel, well, let's cut him some slack. All right? He's obviously grown up in a pagan household. He may have heard stories about God, but his own father has an idol of Baal and an Asherah pole and so on. He lives in a pagan society, a pagan household, and they took their religion very seriously. You didn't mess with people's altars and idols and places of worship. It was usually a death sentence. So he's being called on to do something that normally would have gotten him killed. So let's cut him a little slack. He does it at night. Okay. Well, they find it cut down. Where is it? Gideon, bring him out. You know, he's going to pay for this. And God works the situation to save him. Now, God is not done with Gideon. What happens? And it says in verse 33, all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the sons of the east assembled themselves, and they crossed over and camped in the valley of Jezreel. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, and messengers were sent out, and all these people gathered up. Whoa, things are really starting to happen. All right, it's one thing to pull down an Asherah pole and an altar to Baal in night, at night with some of your friends. It's one thing to do that. It's another thing when all of a sudden the Midianites and all their armies have showed up and they are arrayed in battle against you. And suddenly the full impact of the fact that you are leading this, you're about to not only put your own life on the line, but you're about to lead other people into battle and have them die as well. Now, we hear about presidents of the United States, how they always talk about how sobering a decision it is to make that decision to send our troops into battle. You remember in the wars that we fought, there's always this, well, I wrestled with this, it was a difficult decision to make. How difficult a decision do you think it was for Gideon? He has not been a leader, he has not been somebody in command, and now we find him, here are armies arrayed against him, and everybody's looking to him, he's got an army behind him as well, there's a showdown coming. So Gideon's fleece was only done in the context of an impending battle in which many people could lose their lives. And that's where we find him saying, don't be angry, please. He was respectful. Okay? He did not put out the fleece lightly, and I think we need to learn something from this, and that is that the idea of putting out a fleece is not a trivial thing. This is not an idea that we just use in casual everyday decisions. Oh, well, God, if some weird bizarre thing happens over here, then I'll know that I'm supposed to do this. That is not how it works. Okay? This is an extreme example in which people's lives were on the line, and Gideon, after saying, God, please don't be angry with me, I just want to make absolutely certain I'm about to commit people into battle. And I want no shadow of a doubt before I do this. Now, when you find yourself in that kind of a situation, then I feel it may be appropriate for you to pursue this kind of guidance. But this is not the kind of guidance we just do in casual, everyday decisions. That to me is what I take away from this particular example of Gideon's fleece. So I hope that puts a kind of different light on it. You've got to understand Gideon's fleece in the context in which it was used. Now, the last two illustrations, of course, we're familiar with in chapter 7. The people that were with Gideon, they rose early. And the Lord came to Gideon and said, the people who are with you are too many for me to give Midian into their hands. What do you mean? We're about to fight a battle. Don't you want as many people? How many want as many people on your side as you can when you're about to go and fight? I want everybody I can get. It only makes sense. But God knows, and he says, Israel would become boastful saying, my own power has delivered me. When God leads, and when God guides us in His will, what is He concerned about? Is He concerned about how you are glorified? Is He concerned about how you are going to be exalted? Is He concerned about how your career is going to be made? How your popularity is going to increase? How your fame is going to grow? How your wealth is going to prosper? Is that His primary concern? As God is leading, God's primary concern is that He be glorified and that His power be displayed. And so 22,000 people left and only 10,000 remained. And you know the story. How many people did Gideon end up with? I will deliver you with the 300 men. Wait a second! 300 men? You've got to be kidding me. There is no possible way we could do this. And so they set out. And the same night it came about, the Lord said, arise and go against the camp. I've given it into your hands. Look at verse 10 of chapter 7 in Judges. But if you are afraid to go down, if you are afraid, he knew Gideon was afraid. I would have been afraid too. He said, but if you are afraid, I've already given them into your hands. But if you're afraid, go down and listen to what they have to say. And we know the story of what happened. And then, of course, Gideon led his 300 men and they won the day. What does that say to us about how God leads? Verse 10 there. God, even in the midst of wanting to build our faith, even in the midst of wanting to lead us in ways that we don't think possible, God encourages us. He understands our fears. He understands our frailties. He knew that Gideon was afraid, and he encouraged him by that situation. God didn't have to do that, did he? God could have just commanded him to go, and he would have given them the battle. But God put that little extra thing in there for Gideon's well-being, and I think also to tell us something about the way he leads as well. So again, we're talking about finding God's will and we're looking at how God leads other people. We've looked at Isaac, and we've seen how important it is to be honoring God. God honors those that honor Him. We looked at Moses, and we looked at how God expects us to follow His direction, even if we don't think we are up to the task. Oh, I can't do that. Oh, I don't have the skill set. I will go with you. I will be with you. We looked at Joseph, and we've looked at how God tests us and builds us through sometimes leading us in ways we don't understand. Joshua, how important it is to, even when we think we know how to make a good decision, how important it is to ask God beforehand, is this what we should do? And then finally, Gideon. Now, Gideon was led one step at a time, but Gideon was also led with some signs. And I feel like what we learn here is that Gideon's fleece is not something that we use lightly. Gideon's fleece was used in an extreme situation. And so that should not be what we turn to as a norm for finding God's will.